Welcome to this special installment of the Tractor Time podcast. Today we're launching the first in a three-part series called Integrating Precision Analysis with Crop Input Applications. The series is brought to you by Apical Crop Science, a company dedicated to helping farmers reach maximum crop quality and yields within organic and regenerative production standards. Through data-driven laboratory methods, Apical delivers enterprise-grade solutions and systems that are precise, cost-effective, and eco-friendly. Apical Crop Science, a new paradigm of crop nutrition. Learn more at apical-ag.com. That's apical-ag.com. I'm your host, Paul Meyer, editor of Acres USA magazine. And today, in the first episode of the series, we're talking about water analysis with David Knaus, who's the founder and president of Apical Crop Science. Welcome, David.
Thank you, Paul. It's great to be here. I really appreciate the opportunity to speak to your audience.
So, David, you were raised in an organic farming background. You come from an organic farming background. You've seen some of these regenerative farming practices evolve over the years and improve. Can you just describe your background, your path, how you came to this, and how you founded and why you founded Apical?
Yeah, thanks, Paul. So I grew up and have been involved in organic gardening and farming in a variety of scales and sizes for really my entire life, since about the time I was 3 years old. We grew a tremendous amount of fruits and vegetables in upstate New York on my mother's property. And then when I was in my 20s and 30s, I did a tremendous amount of organic crop cultivation in the Pacific Northwest on small, mid, and eventually large scale production systems in organics. So fruits, small fruits, vegetables, berries, tree fruit, etc. And I've seen over the years from, we'll call it, 20, 30 plus years ago, whereas back then, most people were trying to do sort of a back to the land type approach, getting out of the current system and going back to maybe living, a little bit closer to the land in a different type of a farming environment or a farming community that was, trying to remove themselves from society in one way, shape, or form. What we see today is the regenerative and organic production systems being woven inexorably into the fabric of society through corporate development of large-scale farms, development of organic production standards by government institutions, and how those sorts of larger-scale organizations interact with the small, medium, and larger-size farmers, boots-on-the-ground type folks. And we've seen a huge amount of innovation based off of the organic ethics, which I do believe is now sort of what we have started to refer to as this new paradigm. There's new product development, new types of agronomy, data processing, and so on that are really helping growers to refine how they implement eco-friendly technologies. But also on the negative side, there's what once this very relatively pure activist movement, it has to meet the rubber to the road of policy, regulation, global shipping standards, et cetera. And all of where, how does all that come together and meet in the marketplace is really anybody's guess at this point. And so I see that as really this really exciting landscape of opportunity as risk and science to sort of bridge the gap between the two.
We're going to talk about all of that and some of the getting down from some of the big picture to the small here. We're talking about water analysis specifically in this podcast today. Why are we starting with water analysis? I mean, you guys at Apical are also doing soil analysis. You're doing plant sap analysis. But why is water so important? Why are we starting there?
Yeah, that's a really, really good question. And when we were planning the series, I thought to myself that water analysis is extremely fundamental and often overlooked within crop input analysis and crop improvement. But plants are over 90%, 95% water in certain cases, and it's the lifeblood of crops. We've seen that proper water analysis can very easily and quickly explain many of the things that we see in the leaf sap analysis. For example, high saline water shows up in the leaf. Stunted crop, that also shows up from a saline issue. We've seen elevated levels of one element or another, zinc or boron or something like that in certain cases. And all of these things play into managing successful crops. But what we see is that oftentimes water analysis is so fundamental, yet so overlooked. And so I really wanted to shine a light onto the topic, because we feel that everybody does soil analysis, right? Some people really have found some good luck with, you know, either tissue or plant sap, but water is so fundamental.
Before we even get into talking about water that farmers are using for irrigation or for foliar spraying, what about in non-irrigated cropland? I mean, is it important to even test the rainwater that is coming down on your crops? And how could growers use that information to affect what they want to do on their farms?
Yeah, that's a really good question. And I'm not probably not the best guy to speak on this topic. However, I do know enough that there's some tests that have been coming out regarding levels of pesticides or salts or metals, other unwanted contaminants of many bodies of water, you know, lakes, rivers, rainfall, as you mentioned as well. And this sort of underscores the point that I really wanted to shine the light on in this episode, was that water analysis is fundamental there. But even taking it a step further, for guys that are in dryland crops that are maybe never using any sort of irrigation, they're going to be affected by potentially contaminated water from other sources, right? Or they may have some contaminated water that they're using as a foliar spray. And so say you're trying to accomplish a pest management strategy with a foliar spray. Well, if that water is contaminated, the efficacy may of your pesticide application or your fungicide application may be dropped by 50 or 80%, necessitating using double or triple, maybe even more rates or passes of that same pesticide.
What explicitly are you looking for on a water test for something that's going to be used for a foliar analysis? I mean, is it hardness? Is it parts per million of carbonates? Or what are you looking for that marks a good water?
Really nothing is what marks a good water. The less in it, generally speaking, the better. The more bicarbonates, or the higher the pH or the lower pH, the more that is out of the range, nitrates, any one metal or another, all of these we're looking for as negatives. If we have not a lot of negatives, we consider that actually a good water test. So it's kind of reverse psychology, I suppose, where we want to have as few things in the water as possible.
Do you have a number in mind for hardness, that above this number that you wouldn't recommend that water for a foliar spray? And is it different for irrigation water versus foliar spray? I mean, most of the time, guys have what they have for irrigation. You can't really do much about it.
Yeah, so for hardness or alkalinity or bicarbonates or any of the sort of binding ion type elements and molecules, it's best to have them as low as possible. So I think on bicarbonates, you want to be below 75 ppm on a foliar spray, and realistically below 60 or so for irrigation. And this leads to a lot of problems with penetration foliarly, also into the root zone, tie-ups in nutrients and other elements, complexes in the soil that can lead to specific nutrient deficiencies long-term. So there's not really any number that's precise, but generally speaking, there's ranges that are acceptable. And if you go outside of those ranges, either for a foliar spray or for an irrigation type application, the further you go outside of either of those ranges, what you're going to have is long-term buildup in the soil or the plant and associated problems that come from that. Or you'll have an overarching problem within the system with an acute application.
Can you talk briefly about treatment options? So you've got water that is, you know, has too much of any one thing. What are some of the options that can be used to make that water usable?
Yeah, so it kind of falls into two categories. So there's the one category that would be for foliar sprays. So for foliar spray treatments, those are typically a little bit easier. A lot of guys nowadays are using reverse osmosis followed by a remineralization process. Those are or restructurization mineralization process. Those are the ones that those systems are relatively, they're not cheap, but they're not exorbitantly expensive. And what we have seen from those type of systems that folks are getting anywhere from 15 to sometimes up to 50% reduction in chemical usage when they're using those types of reverse osmosis purification systems. Of course, it depends on, again, how bad the water was to start. And, you know, typically the worse the water is to start, the more benefit you get out of a system like that. So that would be the main system that I would recommend for foliar sprays. There's a number of other sort of anecdotal technologies with structurization and frequency and so on and so forth that do also provide additional layers. But reverse osmosis is generally accepted to be the best and sort of the gold standard for purification for foliar sprays. Similarly, in a perfect world, that would be great to do RO for really, really large systems as well, but it's just typically not economically feasible. So what we have seen is sort of a hodgepodge out there in the marketplace. And I do think there's some room for improvement. We're looking at a couple of different technologies out of New Zealand and South Africa currently that relate to generating molecular reactions within the irrigation pipe itself, using some innovative methods. So that's one thing we're looking at. However, currently implemented, what most folks are doing is either acidification, frequency-based, or some type of microfiltration if they can manage it. So depending on the irrigation flow rates and so on and so forth, microfiltration can work really, really well through carbon-based filters. Those are, or specific types of membranes, if you have a, you know, such something like a boron excess or something of that nature. If you're in a much larger volume situation where you're pumping, you know, thousands of gallons per minute through one single pipe, we've seen folks implement curious types of frequency-based technologies into those systems. And they've been able to consistently drop pH by about 1 point. So we've seen where pH would go from, you know, from an 8 to a 7, or for a 7.5 to a 6.5. And we've seen that consistently monitored over multiple seasons. And it's relatively innovative and obscure technology, but we have seen it be somewhat effective. On the acidification front, there's a lot of different types of acidifiers. Obviously, sulfur is a big one that some folks use. Other ones, folks use citric acid or phosphoric acid injections as well. Those all have their place. And I see, realistically, it's never any one solution, right? There's a variety of different solutions that are each unique to the specific growing environment.
Working with so many clients, I'm sure you've got lots of great examples of this, but can you give us one or two of some growers that have used your water tests and have been able to significantly improve their operations?
Yeah, so one in particular where a grower of blueberries was watering with somewhere in the neighborhood of, I think it was upwards of 250 part per million bicarbonate. And he came in and did a water analysis with us. And, we tested his water, and certain times in the year it came back, you know, anywhere from a 7.5 to an 8.1 plus. So we looked into that. And when we actually ran the numbers, he was applying, over 1,000 pounds of carbonate lime per season just by running irrigation water. And so that came as a real shocker to him. And so there was some remediation things that we did with him, carbon and microbes and some other types of water modification techniques that he used, and actually was able to see a significant benefit and also monitored a long-term adjustment of pH of that block. Another example would be when you get sodium or boron. Those have been two specific examples that we've seen in growers' fields, where you start out with a leaf test because a lot of people know apical for the leaf test, right? And then say, oh well, gosh, you've got 90 part per million of boron or something in your leaf. Let's run a test on your water, and then all of a sudden, the water's pumping in there at 1.5, 2 parts per million, in certain cases 3 parts per million of boron every time they run the water. And so we've seen this a lot in citrus regions and in some other pistachio regions as well. For some guys that have these types of problems, specific clients, we've included injection programs of what we refer to as mineral colloid buffering, and where we're taking carbonate lime and or a complementary type of ion, carbonate lime in the example of the boron, but there's other examples where we're taking a specific mineral and we're using that to sort of rebalance what Mother Nature is actually applying in large amounts.
That's great. What about we're going to talk about soil analysis in the next episode. Do you see much of a correlation between water analysis and soil analysis?
Yeah, we do. It's really interesting, though. It's not as linear as one might expect because of the various types of extraction methods that go into soil analysis. A lot of times a saline problem might get masked in an acid-based soil extraction, and so you wouldn't necessarily see that, but on a water-based extraction, you would. And so, we've been, and I've talked about this at a couple of the Acres events, where we're really interested in apical in the soils part of the lab, and looking at different pools of nutrients within each soil sample that comes in, and understanding how the plants are going to be affected by those different pools of nutrients. So we see that with the water and irrigation water, how that is reflected typically in a soluble analysis, but it can build up over time and create just a long-term systemic issue. And that's where you see growers that aren't happy.
Well, you mentioned speaking at an Acres event, and just want to segue off of that as we close out here to mention that David, you're going to be speaking at our Acres USA Healthy Soil Summit in Monterey, California, this coming August. Is that correct?
Yeah. I'm really excited to come down to California again this summer. And very pleased to speak at the Healthy Soil Summit. It was a fantastic show last year, and looking forward to it again this year.
Great. That's August 23rd and 24th in Monterey. Learn more at events.acresusa.com. And that's all we have time for today. I want to thank you, our audience, for listening to this first of our three episodes with David Knaus of Apical about integrating precision analysis with crop input applications. Apical Crop Science, a new paradigm of crop nutrition, delivering data-driven enterprise-grade solutions for improving regenerative agricultural systems. Learn more at apical-ag.com. That's apical-ag.com. For Tractor Time and Acres USA, I'm your host, Paul Meyer, editor of Acres USA Magazine. Thanks.